When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
B-Pod Studios.
Joining me, as he does every week, to preview the upcoming Temple football game as well as recap the latest one, is Owl Scoop's John DiCarlo. John, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Pat. How you doing?
Good, man. A lot better after watching the performance of E.J. Warner against Lehigh. To talk about that game before we get into the Rutgers matchup. You guys talked about it on The Scoop, which you can find on all of the podcast platforms. It's the preeminent Temple podcast for sports. But you guys talked about it a lot, where the similarities between this year and the 2013 year, which was Matt Rhule's first year, are just, it's becoming to the point where you can't really ignore it. And the latest one being that E.J. Warner comes in and really looks the part against an FCS opponent. Talk about what you saw from him, what you liked from him. I know you had to watch the game back because you were traveling, but is it fair for the fan base to kind of get excited about him, or is it a situation of, let's pump the brakes a little bit, this might be Mike Girardi, this might be Connor Riley, this might be one of those guys?
I think he has a chance to be better than Connor Riley and Mike Girardi. Sure, I mean, why not get excited about it? I mean, it's a week by week thing. He's going to be facing a much better team tomorrow against Rutgers. But I mean, yes, you have to be mindful of leg time and place and everything. EJ Warner did what he did against an FCS team, but you play who you play, and he finished 14 of 19, 173 yards and 2 touchdowns. And when you're, I think I said this on The Scoop, when you're covering a new coach and a new staff, you listen just as much to how they say things as to what they're saying. And Stan Drayton had been saying on a few occasions, we really like what we've seen of EJ. He throws a good ball. He's decisive. He can really spin it. Has a good command of the offense. And yeah, I mean, he sounds like a guy who's been growing up around a Hall of Fame quarterback and Kurt Warner. So, it's kind of, in an unfortunate way, remarkable to see just how inconsistent DeJuan Mathis has been. You see a lot of the physical tools, and he starts off the game throwing a really good pass to Jose Barbone, and then just kind of unraveled after that. 2 fumbles. He just looks like he doesn't look comfortable even running the ball. There was that one time where he slid, and he looked like he was going to hurt himself, and he just seemed disjointed. And I think that this staff isn't afraid to say, okay, taking care of the ball is a big thing, and he's not taking care of the ball, and they must have seen stuff leading into practice to say, okay, we're going to make this switch. We're going to bypass Quincy Patterson, and we're going to throw EJ in the game. I mean, he only threw 5 incomplete passes and did look very decisive and did throw a pretty good football out there. So, yeah, I think there are things to get excited about. I wouldn't necessarily compare him to P.J. Walker just yet, but, yeah, some of the similarities are uncanny. I mean, I think that, if you're that staff, if you're Stan Drayton and you're Danny Langsdorf as offensive coordinator, a big, big part of the season is figuring out what you have and what you don't have. And I think by now they have a pretty good idea of what they have and don't have. And DeJuan Mathis, yes, he was once a really highly touted recruit, and he just hasn't been able to put it together. But at the same time, they have to kind of protect him because, what if EJ goes out and is just completely overwhelmed against Rutgers and they have to put DeJuan back in the game? That's why I say it's a week-to-week existence. But, yeah, it's played really well. And the most impressive thing I think he did in that game was on that second touchdown pass. At that point, Adam Klein was out of the game at right tackle. I don't know for sure yet if he's playing tomorrow. Or if he doesn't, then Temple's chances of winning the game just diminish even further because he's a pretty good right tackle. But Jim Tuobadegu, who's backup, who's very young, allowed pressure there. And instead of just taking the sack or kind of just trying to move or, throw the ball away, EJ stayed in there and delivered a good pass to Jordan Smith. And Jordan Smith was open. He ran a good route. But at any level, that's a hard throw to make when you sit in there and you know you're going to get drilled. So, again, he just looks like a kid who has grown up, like I said. I mean, I'm sure everyone constantly reminds him, oh, you're Kurt Warner's kid, but growing up around Kurt, I'm sure, had its benefits. And he's grown up around the game, and he looks the part. I mean, I was told he had a really good preseason camp and really was kind of disappointed that he wasn't the starter coming out of preseason. That's kind of what you want out of him. So, if going back to this, if you're Stan Drayton, you need to figure out, what do we have in this kid? Can he be good? Is he something that we can build upon? Because they're bringing in another quarterback in the 2023 class, and Tyler Douglas, who's at Ocean Township, where Kenny Pickett is from. So they need to start figuring out what they have there. And it's kind of been a maddening process with DeJuan. And the Lafayette game is a game where he should really go out there and have command of that game. And the way you would want to see E.J. Warner coming into that game would be like in the third quarter of a blowout, instead of needing him to come in to win the game for you. But that's what he did. So, yeah, there are things to get excited about. The way he reads the field, the way he sees the field, and the way he throws under pressure, I would say are things that you get excited about. And now you see how he grows and develops this week.
All right, now looking at just as an outsider's perspective, right, you go, okay, Temple University got Kurt Warner's kid who played high school football in Arizona. How exactly does that happen? So I'll ask you, how did they end up getting Kurt Warner's kid, E.J. Warner, to commit to Temple University when he wasn't playing football anywhere near Temple?
His brother played at Nebraska when Danny Langsdorf was there, so there was the connection there. And I think that, you know, E.J. had some other offers, but I think it's probably too convenient to say it, but it's true. Probably didn't have a ton of other high major offers because, I mean, he's listed at 6 feet, 190 pounds. He's probably closer to like 5'11". So I think maybe just like that part of it might have, you know, affected his recruitment. But, you know, you don't see too many 5'11 quarterbacks in the NFL. I mean, you know, maybe Drew Brees, Russell Wilson, so it can be done. But I'm sure if he was 6'2", 6'3", 6'4", he's maybe out of Temple's range. But, you know, it's been done before. I mean, even you look at what Stetson Bennett's doing. Again, I want to pump the brakes here. He's not Stetson Bennett. He's not like if
you. No, you know, no. You heard it here first. John DeCarlo predicting you'll win a national championship.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, go with that. Or even just, you know, to localize it a bit more in terms of Temple's conference. You know what Mackenzie Milton did at UCF before. Unfortunately, he had that bad injury. I mean, he was a 5'11" quarterback, but again, it's not rocket science. He was decisive. He knew where he wanted to go with the football. So, the connection is there with Langsdorf and Nebraska, with, you know, one of Kurt's other sons. And there was that connection there. And then I think that he probably got overlooked by some other programs because of his height, you know. And so now you have the son of an NFL quarterback with a chip on his shoulder who knows the game pretty well. And that's not a bad thing to have. And a couple of people told me now that he was really hoping to be named the starter coming out of camp. And, you know, again, in a perfect world, DeJuan Mathis is playing well and you get to redshirt EJ for a year and let him develop. But again, one game, small sample size, did pretty well so far. And again, now he faces a better team with a, you know, just better personnel. We'll see how he does with that.
All right, now looking at that other team coming in, Rutgers, they put a beat down on Temple last season. It was ugly, obviously. Look, new team, new coaching staff, new mindset, all of that. I was kind of surprised that Temple chose this to be their homecoming game after what transpired last year. But what kind of team do you think is coming in? I know that on the scoop, you guys were talking about it, and your co-host, Kyle, was a little more bullish on the Scarlet Knights coming in. He wasn't really that impressed, but for an outsider not really following Rutgers football, what are they getting?
What's Temple, 17.5-point underdog in this game? I mean, I think that's about right, but, you know, Noah Vedral, their quarterback, is probably not going to play this week. I think there's a little bit of gamesmanship there on Greg Schiano's end where he's saying, you know, we'd have to see how he does with midweek practices and stuff like that. So if he doesn't play, you're going to be looking at two quarterbacks, Gavin Wimsatt and Evan Simon. Evan Simon might be the guy that starts. Wimsatt's got a strong arm. He can run it a little bit better, or a lot better than Evan Simon can. They've got a good offensive line that's, you know, four of the five starters there are transfers, and they can run the ball really well. Kyle Monninga is a good running back. Al-Sadi Salam is good too. I think I would look more at what they did against Boston College than against Wagner. Wagner stinks. And I mean, to be fair, you know, Rutgers did what they were supposed to do against them. They routed them and took care of business. But one of the more impressive things that Rutgers did 2 weeks ago at Boston College in their season opener was they put together a game-winning drive in the closing moments. I think it was a 12-play drive, and 11 of those 12 plays were runs, and it was an incomplete pass. So if they need to kind of just wear Temple down, they can do that. And I think the only, you know, two ways Temple can win this game. One, if EJ Warner continues to progress, keeps drives going in a smart with the football, and then whether it's, you know, Darian Barner at defensive end or Leighton Jordan, who's always starting to come around at one of those outside linebacker positions, if they can get past that offensive line and make these two young quarterbacks uncomfortable, then maybe they got a shot. You know, like Kyle was saying, that, you know, Aaron Cruikshank and Josh Youngblood, you know, two of their receivers aren't, you know, A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith, but they're fast. And Temple's defensive backfield, you know, with the exception of Jalen McMurray, they've been a little shaky. They were hoping that Dominic Hill, the South Carolina transfer, would be better, and he's been a little inconsistent so far. You know, Cameron Ruiz is still, I think, coming back from the injury he sustained, and Keyshawn Paul, I think this staff feels a little differently about him than the previous staff did. But that defensive backfield has had its ups and downs. So, and Cruikshank's dangerous too on reverses and stuff like that. So Rutgers, I think it starts with their offensive line, and they can really continue to run the ball if they need to. So Temple just has to be, you know, fundamentally sound there, tackle much better than they did 2 weeks ago at Duke. I don't think it's an unwinnable game, but I think Rutgers is favored, you know, for a reason. So I think it really does start with what they have going with their offensive line. They've been good. They've been getting better. And like I said, they can really run the ball when they need to. And I think that's going to be one of the biggest challenges for Temple. But if they can in some way, shape, or form affect the game, now let's say Devon Fox goes out and blocks three punts again, like he did last week, if you can tip the game in your favor and kind of change the narrative of the game, flip the field position, you make something happen on special teams, and you somehow grab an early lead, and then you can force a couple of younger quarterbacks to pass and knock them around, then that's how you can make some things happen if you're Temple. If Rutgers gets an early lead and they can keep running the ball and running the ball, then I think it's going to be really hard for Temple to win.
Make a prediction, you coward.
What did I say on the scoop? 38-14 Rutgers. I think I'll go with that.
All right, and overall, how do you expect, usually we end with the prediction, but how do you expect EJ Warner to fare in this game? Do you expect the lights to be too bright? Because the thing that I, and you guys touched on it, but the thing I was most impressed with was the throw that he had where he got absolutely drilled in the pocket, but he delivered a strike. That's against an FCS opponent. He's probably going to have to deal with that a little bit more against Rutgers. And I'm kind of worried that this kid's, you know, 8 months removed from high school. Do I really want to kind of not ruin him necessarily, but get him a little skittish and gun shy? How do you think he approaches this week, and how do you think he performs?
I don't worry about that at all with him. I think where the limitations could be is, you know, the interior of Temple's offensive line is very young and very inexperienced. Like after the Duke game, Dan Drayton had said, I was really impressed with how James Famenu played. He was the Houston transfer, and then James Famenu didn't play, you know, the following week against Lafayette. So maybe he just had a bad week of practice, but yeah, you know, James barely played at Houston, and he's a guy that they're developing that they like. So Bryce Toman and Wisdom Quarshie, your left guard and your right guard, are guys that have been in the program for a little bit, but they still have their moments. They have still have their moments where they get beat and they're still untested. And Adam Klein at right tackle and Isaac Moore at left tackle are pretty solid players, but they're only as good as the interior of their offensive line. Rich Rodriguez, their center, has been pretty solid through the first two games, no fumbled exchanges or, you know, mistakes there. But the interior of that offensive line hasn't been great. And, you know, if they're not blocking well, there's not much that EJ Warner can do there. I wouldn't call him a dynamic runner at this point. Again, I think his strength is he's decisive, knows the offense, he's growing in the offense. I don't worry about, you know, I don't worry about the game being too big for him. I think they probably will get north of 30,000 people at the game. That's a pretty good crowd. I think the Laura Bowl is going to be full. You'll have some Rutgers fans there. I think this is a kid who's grown up around the game. He's learned a lot from his father. I don't think he's going to be overwhelmed by the moment, but if he's overwhelmed by a pass rush that he can't get away from, that's the bigger issue.
All right, well, I'll be there Saturday, 2 p.m. at the Link homecoming. We will be broadcasting live, me and Andrew Salchunas, before the game in the K-Lot. So if you guys are, you know,
should I stop by?
I think you should stop by. You should stop by and do what a lot of people do and try to talk to us while we're literally on the air. Just try to, like, get your points across and talk to us like we're broadcasting you, because we are, John. We're just doing this
never,
for you.
I would never do that. I will skillfully wait until you guys are in a break, and then I'll come over and give you a hug.
I could see you being the Baba Booey guy. But, hey, we'll find out, right? Saturday, 2 p.m. at the Link. You can read John's stuff at owlscoop.com. You can follow him at owlscoop_com or at jdecarlo. And then also he has the, as I talked about, the Preeminent Temple podcast. You've got the Scoop, and then you also do the I Believe in Temple Football podcast with former quarterback Adam DeMichael.
Thanks, Pat.
Do I have everything covered?
You do, yeah.
Okay. All right, yeah, your LinkedIn is a lengthy one. John, I appreciate it. We'll talk to you next week.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.